Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Limits, let's bring on our friend and yours, Mr. Mike DeFabo of The Athletic. Sports Talk on the Fan, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Mike, it's a big day today and tomorrow. A lot of guys, you know, sometimes I'll just speak for myself. I don't think of this, but you know, it's a crushing end to their football careers. Some guys who have done things in a high-profile way in college, you know what I mean? This is just a big day for people today and tomorrow. I think 4 p.m. is the deadline for the 53-man roster. What are the most interesting bubble stories here?
Well, I look at that defensive back group because going into that final preseason game, it looked to me like James Pierre, Beanie Bishop, and Corey Trice, there were maybe three guys competing for two possible spots. And so I'm really interested to see what happens with that position group in particular. You know, right now Corey Trice is dealing with a hamstring injury. He said in the locker room that he hopes to be back by week one. But really, there's a chance that the Steelers hope that he's not, because if you're able to put him on injured reserve, then maybe you're able to sneak through Pierre and Beanie Bishop. So all three of those guys, you know, I kind of have my eye on them. I also have some questions about which of the offensive linemen are going to make the team. Questions, I guess, about inside linebacker position. Do they end up keeping Mark Robinson and end up keeping five? Could Carson Bruner be part of that conversation? So there's definitely some intriguing question marks going into tomorrow.
What about defensive line? What are you hearing about Derek Harmon? And what about, unless you include this guy as a linebacker, I don't know, DeMarvin Leal, and then also Loudermilk?
Yeah, so, you know, Derek Harmon, he sprained his MCL, and he's going to be out week to week. So whether he's able to come back in time for week one or whether he misses one, two, three games, I think that's kind of the question based on the severity of that sprain. So, you know, right now, the next man up on the depth chart would be Isaiah Loudermilk. And I'm sure that doesn't make too many people happy, because I think most people who follow his team would agree he kind of is what he is at this stage. And so my big question there is, like, how much can Y.A. Black change that conversation? He was really good in that final preseason game. He had five tackles. He had two sacks. And you're just seeing his length at nearly 6'7" be such of a factor. And so, you know, I think that when it comes to the conversation of who's going to replace Derek Harmon, I would guess that Loudermilk is the next man up. I think that Black is going to get significantly more playing time. Logan Lee, I think, is going to get some more. Daniel Ekowale, I think, could get some more. So I think it's going to be kind of a by-committee approach, and we could end up seeing the other rookie, Y.A. Black, a little bit more now that Harmon could miss a game or maybe a bit more than that.
Is the Y.A. Black story real here to you? Is this guy going to be an impact player against varsity players?
You know, a lot of people were kind of poo-pooing it online when I said, you know, I've been impressed by Y.A. Black, and they were saying, well, look, he's doing this against backups. And that is true. In the preseason game, he was absolutely dominating and manhandling those backups. But even when he's been playing against the first team offense, we've seen Y.A. Black be impactful. There was a pretty funny play last week where the offense was working on red zone passing, and Y.A. Black reached up and batted a pass at the line of scrimmage, and they had to yell at him and say, like, look, this isn't your period. This is meant to be the first team offense's period, and you're disrupting it. And everyone kind of laughed, and they were like, he just can't help himself. And so, like, I mean, he is a fifth round pick, but he also was a fifth round pick in a very deep defensive tackle class. Of all the position groups in the draft, this was one of the strongest. And I feel like even though he was a fifth round pick, he has talent that far exceeds that. And I think if they can really unlock that, because he has such a big frame, he has a really good motor, he has those long arms, and he's been able to use his leverage to his advantage, you know, I think that he could be a player that we see more of earlier than expected.
Why did he last so long in the draft, Mike? Like, what was the main concern about him?
Well, I think part of it goes back to how Iowa plays defense. And they're a legitimate two-gapping defensive front, meaning you're responsible for a primary gap and a secondary gap, and your job is to keep linebackers clean. And over the last 2 years, you know, their star linebacker, I think, racked up nearly 140 tackles because guys like Y.A. Black were keeping him clean. So now he comes to the Steelers, and while they have a lot of two-gapping principles, they also allow their defensive linemen to attack upfield a bit more than Iowa did. So he's flashing more, you know, he's more impactful. The other part, again, goes back to just the depth of this tackle class. That's why the Steelers, like, it was a good situation for them. Everyone knows that they need to upgrade their defensive line. They need to start thinking about life after Cameron Hayward. So if there was a year to double dip or go back for seconds, on that defensive tackle class, this was really a good year to do so. So I feel like, you know, they got maybe a third-round talent for a fifth-round price.
Mike DeFabo of The Athletic, he's at Steeler practice right now. All right, Mike, is the Cam Hayward story finished? And if so, did we miss it? How did it end? Tell us.
No, I don't think that it's finished. He has returned to practice, and he is now taking part in full team drills, full 11-on-11 periods. But that doesn't change the fact that he's still looking for a revision to his contract and basically looking for a raise. And, you know, there's a couple ways that they could come to an agreement here. One way would be to take his roster bonus that he's due next year and make that guaranteed to give him a little bit of insurance. I don't know if that's going to be what they ultimately do. That's one option. The other option would be to rip up his current contract and draw up a new one. And that's really what it would probably take, even if they end up, you know, just simply making next year's roster bonus guaranteed, is him signing a new contract. So he's out here. He's practicing in full. He's no longer holding in or holding out or wherever he was doing.
Okay.
But that doesn't change the fact that he's still looking for change to his contract.
Mike, will you play a game with Limits and I? Will you agree to that?
I was hoping you would ask me. Yes, please. I'd love that.
All right, let's do that. I'm going to give you, based on your story from last week or maybe the weekend, I don't know, about the roster, we're going to grade each position group very quickly. And then if a question comes up, whether it's, hey, are they going to trade this guy? What about this guy's injury? Limits and I will add that little question in. Are you ready?
All right, let's do it.
All right. We'll go myself, you, and Limits on the grades for each position. Okay. It says you're mixed in here is your roster projection. Quarterbacks, three of them. You say Rodgers, Rudolph, Howard, and Skylar Thompson will be cut and maybe go to the practice squad. I give the Steelers quarterback room a B-. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I also mentioned there, Joe, if you read the paragraph, that I think there's a chance that they place Will Howard on injured reserve.
Okay.
And that's another one of my big questions. That would be a way to sneak Skylar Thompson through or retain him a little bit longer. Maybe there's a team that's interested in him in a trade. You know, I think that this is, I would agree, you know, B-, I think, is what I would give it. At The Athletic, we had 50 NFL GMs, front office people, coaches anonymously rate the quarterbacks, and Rodgers was listed as 16th. So
Damn. The
league, the consensus is he's about average. So I think a B- makes sense for that. I think he's going to be, you know, he's a solid starter, but he's not an elite starter anymore. So I think B- makes sense.
Limits, grade?
I give him a B. Teetering on a B-, but I give him a B.
Holy ostrich follicles. Why? That's above average.
Yeah, because I believe in Aaron Rodgers. I think he's more like the 12th or 13th best quarterback, which
right.
I know isn't splitting that many hairs compared to 16th, but
fair
that's
enough.
Why I give him that edge.
Fair enough. Wide receivers. You have the guys making the team. Metcalf, Austin, Roman Wilson, Skoronek, Scotty Miller, Bobby Trees gets cut, the great Max Hurlman goes to the practice squad, etc. I give these wide receivers, oh boy, I give them a C is where I go, Mike. You?
I give them a B- just because I think that DK Metcalf is really a difference-making type of wide receiver. I think you're seeing it especially in seven shots in the red zone, where he's such a big body that he's able to beat even these talented, this talented trio of Steelers cornerbacks off the line of scrimmage with slants. He's able to win on out routes, and Rodgers is able to find him and hit him. You know, and I think really the final grade, if we were to do the same exercise at the end of the year, it's going to be really hinge upon Roman Wilson. Because if he steps up and he continues what's been a solid last couple of weeks and starts contending and pushing Calvin Austin for wide receiver two playing time, you're going to feel a lot better about the depth of this group. But if he's, again, slow to start and maybe endures injuries like he did last year, then this roster is going to look really identical to what it did last year, which was number one wide receiver and then everybody else. And so, you know, that would be my concern. It's also possible they add to this group. So, you know, we may want to do this exercise another week as well.
Mike, I mean, people are turning Scotty Miller into as legendary a sports figure as Scotty Bowman. Limits? What's your grade for this?
I give him a C+, Joe. I still have concerns with this Calvin Austin injury, Roman Wilson, C+.
C+. Okay, running backs. You have Jaylen Warren, Caleb Johnson, Kenneth Gainwell as the guys who make the team. Trey Sermon on the practice squad. Lou Nichols has been pretty good on the practice squad. Caleb Johnson remains a mystery. First impressions, frankly, for me, haven't been great. I'm again, you know, and everything's relative to the rest of the NFL. I guess I'll go C+ for the Steelers running backs. How about you, Mike?
I hate to just give every single group a B or a B-, but I think B- for this one. You know, I think that even though Caleb Johnson, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, where he's been running into loaded boxes and been hit behind the line of scrimmage, but I've heard so many people be like, oh, here's Najee Harris 2.0. I just don't see that at all. And you're seeing his vision and his patience and his ability to cut the ball back, which is just so different than what the Steelers got from Najee Harris, that I think the more he gets playing time and the more he gets familiar with what's going on here, I think that he, by the end of the season, is going to have a real chance to start taking that leap to being that future franchise bell cow. You know, I think this year is going to be kind of a by-committee approach. And I do have my questions about, like, can Jaylen Warren carry the load based on his body type and his stature?
Yeah.
You know, and is Kenneth Gainwell going to be more than just a gadget guy? But, you know, I still want to believe that Caleb Johnson is going to eventually show the reason why the Steelers drafted him, and he's going to be a good scheme fit for Arthur Smith.
Limits, yeah, Caleb Johnson could change my opinion of this, but right now I see it as a C to a C+ group. How about you?
B-.
B-. How about the offensive? We're all in the same ballpark here. We haven't radically had a departure other than you going up to a B on the quarterbacks. The offensive line, you have Jones, Seumalo, Frazier, McCormick, Fatanu, Anderson, McCollum, Anderson, Spencer, and Calvin. And Pete, no relation to Calvin Pete, there as your swing guy. With, well, who cares who got cut? I mean, they do, obviously, Mike, but I really don't. I give this group a, I don't know. Again, so much depends on Broderick Jones and Fatanu, and I've never seen them in their current positions in the NFL. I can't go higher than a C+ maybe, which is how I see this whole offense, and I guess it's playing out now. I didn't pre-plan this. I'm doing this spur of the moment. How about you?
No, I would agree with you for C+. I mean, this has the makings of a group that should eventually, at some point, become an A group. That's what the Steelers are counting on. When they moved up to draft Broderick Jones in the first round, and they basically charted the course for this franchise that they were going to be a team that wanted to invest in the offensive line and wanted to win games because of that offensive line. But I just don't know that they're going to be there quite where they want to be this season. And so, I mean, I think I've liked what I've seen in pass protection in games. It hasn't been as good in practices. But still, my big concern is, like, are they going to be able to run the ball effectively and efficiently? Last year, they ran the ball a lot, but they did not run the ball very well. And so far, based on what I've seen in preseason games when the starting line has been in there, what I've seen in the joint practice, what I've seen in training camp when they've actually put the pads on, I have not seen a lot of success from the offensive line running the football.
Yeah.
I mean, that can change in 3-4 weeks. We might be talking about a completely different story. But until I see it, I think that coupled with some of the inexperience with the young tackles, I have to still put them at right now a C-plus at best.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Mr. P?
Yeah, I give them a C. They're just an average unit at the moment. Got to see more.
I mean, yes. If Fatanu and Jones live up to their pedigree, I agree with Mike, it could go from C to A in an awful hurry. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm where they say there's where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Tight end slash fullback. You have them keeping four, Mike, and we're talking to Mike DeFabo of The Athletic. Freiermuth, Smith, Mount Washington, and Hayward. You know, I think that's a pretty deep group. A lot of it depends on Mount Washington. Does he become an actual threat? I'm going to give this group a B-plus right now, a B-plus, although there's the question. I keep hearing Artie is a tight ends guy. Then how come Kyle Pitts was a bust? Anyway, B-plus. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would agree, B-plus. I mean, you just look at what they're spending. And with Pat Freiermuth and Jonnu Smith, they have two of the 10 highest-paid tight ends on their roster. And they're with an offensive coordinator who's probably the most tight-end-friendly offensive coordinator in the NFL. So at this point, there should be no excuse. Like, Arthur Smith wants to feature the tight end position. Omar Khan went out. He re-signed Pat Freiermuth. He went and he got him Jonnu Smith. They've got a really unique weapon in Darnell Washington. So, like, if this offense doesn't thrive and doesn't thrive because of the tight ends, then I think it would be time to seriously reevaluate what you're doing here. And if you really want to put three and four tight ends on the field at the same time, if you're not going to get the production. But in terms of the talent, this has to be one of the better tight end rooms in the NFL just based on the fact of what they're paying these guys.
Limits?
I give them an A.
Wow. Mike, what do you think of that? Limits goes out on a limb there, doesn't he?
I mean, they could. You like what I'm talking about. They've got two of the 10 highest paid tight ends plus Darnell Washington. And I know a lot of people probably are saying, like, well, why don't they cut Connor Hayward? One thing to factor in there is Arthur Smith was talking to me about if you have a lot of three tight end stuff in the game plan and then you lose one in game, yeah, and your whole game plan goes awry. So they're going to keep four tight ends. And Connor Hayward, you know, sure seems like he's going to be that guy based on the way they like his versatility and because of his special teams production.
What are they going to do on fourth and one? Are they going to have a fullback blocking? Who's that fullback going to be? Are they going to use a tush push? What's their strategy? Because they stunk in short yardage last year.
Yeah, they were really bad. One of the worst in the league. I don't know that I haven't seen Aaron Rodgers do a QB sneak, and I wonder if that's still something they'd want him to do at his age.
Well, I'm thinking somebody else. I'm thinking like another person could come in and do the tush. I don't know. What are they going to do on fourth and one?
Joe, I don't have an answer for you. I wish I knew, but I didn't. I don't know because, again, like you're talking about, when Ben Roethlisberger was older, they'd stopped doing the QB sneak altogether. And so I don't know if that's part of their playbook with Aaron Rodgers or if they're simply going to hand the ball to one of their big running backs. I'm kind of interested to see about this whole Mark Robinson as a fullback experiment. We saw it one time in a short yardage situation. But that was it. But if he's able to do that, that could help add some value and maybe help solidify his roster spot.
Who was that?
That was Ben saying quarterback sneak.
I thought that was Kabali. I honest to God, thought Kabali took DeFabo's phone. All right, Mike, we have Mike DeFabo here. We have to speed this up mostly for your sake here, so let's go through the defense fairly quickly here. It's me, Mike, and Limits grading these units, and then if we have a quick question, we can do it. Defensive line, you say they're going to keep seven. Hayward, Benton, Harmon, Black, Equale, Lee, and Loudermilk. people wanting to turn Y.A. Black into a more legendary figure than Y.A. Tittle at this point based on what he's done against backups in the preseason. I'm not saying he won't be good. He might be. I worry about age with Hayward. I worry about is he going to take the step forward we expected last year with Benton? Harmon's hurt. Is Black for real? And then nothing after that. I'm sorry. This group gets to no better than a C right now. It's a C, Mike. And that's concerning.
Well, I think that there's, you know, with the star top three, I think that's close to an A. I think that's an A-minus group if Benton takes that next step forward. And I think he's been pretty good. And I think Harmon has been as advertised. So when they're healthy and when you have the starters in, I think that this could be a very good defensive line. But I agree with you that the depth behind them is not good. And I think that they drop off a cliff significantly when they're not playing those top three. I think overall I'd give them, again, yeah, a B-minus. That's my go-to. But I do have faith in the top guys, and I have the same questions you do about everybody after them.
Yeah, I mean, okay, top guys A, backups F. That comes out to a C or a B-minus. Limits, what do you have?
B-minus, we meet again.
We meet again, don't we? Outside linebackers, Watt, Highsmith, Herbig, Sawyer, that's an A. Mike?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, yeah, that's an A group.
A-plus, maybe.
Yeah, everybody knows what T.J. Watt can do. They know about Alex Highsmith. The question for him is, can he stay healthy? Obviously, the groin injury disrupted his season last year. He's already dealt with a groin issue early in training camp. And then when it comes to the other two, the way I look at it, I think I'm really high on Nick Herbig as a pass rusher. But I think, you know, we saw there was a clip in Cam Hayward's podcast where, I guess, Aaron Rodgers jokes with Herbig and calls him a one-trick pony, and it kind of gets under his skin, but it's kind of true, where he is that speed rush, one-dimensional type of guy, but he's not really that all-around outside linebacker. So the way that I figure it's going to happen is, let's say that Highsmith gets hurt like he did last year. I could see Jack Sawyer playing on rundowns where he can use his physicality, his size, his length to be a factor. And then when they get into passing situations, they bring in Herbig. So you're kind of replacing that person by committee, and I feel like they've got the right guys to do so.
You have Leal getting cut. How about you, Limits? Grade the outside linebackers.
Man, it's a big day, maybe for some edge rushers like Ade and Eko, man, who just got here.
Eko pushes it over the top for me to an A+. Great depth at linebacker, Joe.
I like that. Inside linebacker, Mike, Queen, Wilson, Malik Harrison, Holcomb, who's had an interesting preseason here, and Mark Robinson. Is Holcomb a luxury at this point? Is he tradable at this point? Is he startable at this point? He's really been interesting. I give this group right now a B. How about you?
I think I'd give them a B+ or even an A-. I mean, it wasn't long ago that the inside linebacker group was, you know, the weakest position group on this team. And they went out and it started with signing Cole Holcomb. He gets hurt. Then they bring in Patrick Queen. Then they add Peyton Wilson. So with Peyton Wilson and Patrick Queen, you have two really good coverage linebackers, two of those three down, do everything type of players. And I really think that based on what we've seen in the preseason, I'm really high on Peyton Wilson. I think he's going to take that next step because like his testing numbers were the same as Devin Bush, but he's like 6'2", 6'3", whereas Devin Bush was like 5'10". And it was just because of injury that he slipped as far as Peyton Wilson slipped as far as he did. And so I feel like once he learns the NFL and starts to understand the playbook and starts to process things more quickly, his foot speed should really shine and catch up to, you know, so I think that he's going to take a huge step forward. When it comes to Holcomb, you know, I thought that he was probably right on the fringe, and I didn't know if he was even going to make this team, but he's had a really solid camp, and I think the Steelers kind of like the idea of having three down capable inside linebackers because that is a position group that gets injured. So I think he will make the team. I almost think that he's a lock at this point based on what you've heard from coaches and people in the front office. So
all right.
I think that they've got some more depth and more talent at that position group than they've had in a long time.
We only have a minute. Limits.
B+.
Thank you. Defensive backs. You have Ramsey, Slay, Porter, Elliott, Thornhill, Eccles, Killebrew, Clark, Pierre, and Corey Trice, who's injured more than Crowley. Beanie Bishop getting cut and maybe going to the practice squad. This is interesting to me. Joey Porter Jr. wasn't very good last year. I know he thinks he's elite. I don't necessarily agree. Juan Thornhill thinks they can have the best defense in the history of football. I don't know that I agree with that. Jalen Ramsey's still a good player. Overall, their defensive backs I worry about, quite frankly. I don't know if Darius Slay can still play at a high level. I don't know. I'll go B-minus right now. How about you, Mike, real quick?
I got B-plus. I've got some faith in these guys, and I think it's going to help Joey that he has. He's no longer going to have to just shadow the other team's best player. They've got other options and other ways to handle something like that. So, you know, I think B-plus. And again, I wonder if they maybe put Trice on IR, and that's the way that Beanie makes the team. So I think that's something to keep an eye on.
Limits?
I'll go B, Joe. I'll go B. With B.
You guys are higher on the secondary than I am. What about the safeties, Mike? They have Juan Thornhill and Deshaun Elliott, who's very good against the run, but not a good cover guy. I guess Ramsey will play some safety, but he's also supposed to be their number one corner. How the hell is that going to work?
I'm really interested to see what kind of year Thornhill has, because, you know, Mike Tomlin has made it no secret that they plan to play a lot of man coverage. And free safeties, the way that they get their interceptions and produce their splash is with tip balls and overthrows, and you get those when you're playing man coverage. So I could see a year where Juan Thornhill has a splashy season, and, you know, I could even see him getting his revenge against the Cleveland Browns and the fans that hate him there, and picking off whatever quarterback is playing there. So I think like if Juan Thornhill is your weak link on defense, I actually think that that's good enough. And it's, you know, fans in Cleveland criticized him and they said, oh, Juan Thornhill was invisible. If he's invisible and you don't notice him, that would be a great thing for this defense. And so, you know, I don't think he's going to be an all pro or a pro bowler or even like a plus starter, but I think that he is going to be a serviceable starter that I think is going to produce more splash than even people would expect based on the schematics and based on how the Steelers are going to play things.
Mike, great stuff today. You went above and beyond the call of duty. Who's going to win the punter competition?
I think Cam Johnson, just because he might not be all the way back, but when he's at 100%, I think he's more consistent and reliable than Corliss Waitman. But Corliss Waitman is an NFL caliber punter, and maybe he'll find work elsewhere.
Appreciate it, man. Enjoy the rest of practice.
Thanks,
Mike. We took up the whole practice. That was very nice of you. See you, buddy.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Take it easy.
There he goes, Mike DeFabo.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Browns fans mad at me for the opening rant on Myles Garrett being third in the ESPN poll of best players in the NFL and eight spots ahead of TJ Watt. What they don't realize, because nothing is given context anymore, is that I said that Myles Garrett is obviously a great player. And if you want to put him a slot ahead of TJ, that's fine. I don't agree with it, but that's fine. I also said that he's the only player in the league who has won awards, or certainly was the first, and continues to garner rankings like this based on deep analytics. Deep analytics. Like TJ Watt, with each one of these top 100 that they're doing here on ESPN. And again, the panel was Aaron Schatz, Ben Solak, Dan Graziano, Jeff Legwell, Jeremy Fowler, Liz Losa, Matt Bowen, Mike Clay, Seth Walder, and Stephen Holder. They give a little, you know, profile of the person, little resume, I guess, and then the signature stat. So for TJ, you know, it's sacks. That makes sense, right? That nobody's ever led the league. What was it? They had TJ at 11th. Most sack titles by any player since 1982. Micah Parsons, his signature stat. He's ninth on this list. No problem with that. Parsons is one of two players to record at least 12 sacks in each of their first four seasons. Joining Hall of Famer Reggie White. He was a pretty good player, 85 to 88. Ja'Marr Chase at number 8 became the fifth player since the merger to lead the NFL in receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns, etc., etc., etc. Pat Surtain, the Defensive Player of the Year, racked up 39 passes defended since 2021. Okay, we keep going. Now, the only guy whose signature stat that I see among these top guys that you have to go digging into the analytics is Myles Garrett. Signature stat. Since coming into the NFL in 17, he's forced 215 incompletions with his pass rushes per ESPN Analytics and NFL Next Gen stats. That's the second most to Aaron Donald over that span. As I mentioned earlier, how the hell do you measure that? How do you measure it? There could be the obvious where you're tackling a quarterback as he's throwing and he throws the ball incomplete, right? How often is that measured in there? How can you tell otherwise whether the presence of this guy or a Watt or Micah Parsons or anybody else forced that incomplete? How do you know it wasn't in coverage? How do you know the guy didn't actually have time to throw, took a look, and it was tight coverage and that forced? What are we doing? And Myles Garrett is a great player. Obviously, right? Obviously great. But on what planet are you from if you think he's a better player than Lamar Jackson, a more impactful player than Lamar Jackson, Myles Garrett, and that he's 8 slots ahead of TJ Watt? You put the little chart together where they've played, you know, I think, what, four more games Watt has played?
Yeah.
He's doubled up Garrett in many categories, including, I think, forced fumbles. Do you have that chart in front of you, Limits?
I'm going to pull it up. But
the one that you put out?
Yeah, every statistical category. Interceptions is 7-0. He has more forced fumbles. He has more sacks. He has more tackles for loss. Like every
category.
How many
more forced fumbles?
Let me pull it up.
This isn't making for very good radio with silence. I thought you had it in front of you.
I
had it in front of me before. Yeah, forced fumbles. Well, I think he doubled him up. But those are all conventional stats. With Miles, they go, he's the first guy who won a major NFL award based on deep analytics that some of the people who voted for him previously had scorned. You know?
Forced fumbles is 33-20.
Yeah.
Fumble recoveries is 12-6.
Double.
Sacks is 108-102.
How about forced incompletions? What do you got there, Limits?
You know, not
I'm
listed.
Kidding. I'm
not
kidding,
listed on the stat sheet.
So, yeah, what are we doing? Myles Garrett's a better NFL player than Lamar freaking Jackson. Come on. And Joe Burrow. What in the world are we doing?
And if you want to talk about head-to-head record, Myles Garrett is 3-8-1 in his career against the Steelers.
I don't really want to talk about that because the Steelers are always better than the Browns. I don't really take that into account. But I certainly do take into account most of the time, except in that playoff game. And neither one's done anything in the playoffs, by the way, Watt or Myles Garrett. And then a bigger joke than that is Saquon Barkley way down at 17. I could make a great case he was the best player in football last year. Has he suffered a major injury or something in the offseason that I don't know about? The 17th best player in football is Saquon Barkley? Just absolutely laughable. It really is. It's the most laughable of these many lists that I've ever seen. All right. I'm not going to rant on that anymore, but I'm sure my Twitter timeline will be filled with wonderful compliments from Browns fans. I don't even hate the Browns at all. I have a very rich history with the Cleveland Browns. I loved Greg Pruitt. He was one of my all-time favorite players.
Did you like watching Jim Brown?
Who do you think? I'm Ron Cook? You think I watched Milt Plum play way back when? Limits? No.
Y.A. Tittle and Jim Brown were your favorite players growing up.
But I watched Sam Clancy. I loved him. Trying to think of other Browns. The first Clay Matthews was great. Brian Sipe was fun to watch. They had their little cardiac Browns thing going on there for a while. So it's really not, it's not partial. And of course, people who don't know my history from Cleveland will think that it is, but it's not. I have absolutely nothing against the Browns. I really don't. And at times I've even rooted for them in my career. Mike Pruitt was a good player. Remember him? Was he related to Greg? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Well, how would you know? You don't even know who Mike Pruitt was.
That's why I don't know.
Or Greg Pruitt. Do you? No. Limits?
No idea.
Malsy?
No clue.
A little relapse of Malsy disease?
No,
there?
I have no idea.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Route 19, Peters Township. Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Sunny today with a high of Ramon Foster, 73. Great weather for Bob to golf. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Another Twitter comment that I really had to laugh at. See if I get any other insults from Browns fan. Myles Garrett is living rent-free in Pittsburgh's head. Starkey is a clown. Fair enough. All you people do is cry, says somebody named Sal. He's at John Breadsticks. You must like breadsticks limits, unless there's another meaning for breadsticks that I don't know about. Here's a good one on my Skylar Thompson take from earlier, where people have gone so far overboard on this guy that it makes me feel like we've all lost our minds. Mason Rudolph was better than him against Jacksonville. The Jacksonville first-string defense played one series. Mason tore them up. Then Skylar came in against backups and had a good game. They both struggled in the next game. Skylar Thompson had a 61 passer rating in the second preseason game. And then he played great against Carolina's backups. Carolina's starters stink. What about their backups? What are we doing here? And now it's he's better than Mason Rudolph? Trade Mason? I hear some people say, I've heard people on the station say Skylar is better than Mason. What in the world are we doing? This is the best one, though, from Pittsburgh Sean. You're forgetting Skylar came close and should have. That's S-H-O-U-L-D space O-F. Should have beat Buffalo in a playoff game. What the hell has Rudolph ever done? Well, nobody here is making Mason Rudolph into Dan Marino. I don't know where you got that from. I'll acknowledge it's a fairly low bar, but did you know what Skylar Thompson actually did in that playoff Buffalo? Try 18 for 45 with two interceptions. What are you talking about? Breadsticks. Or no, Pittsburgh. What's his name? Sean. Pittsburgh Sean. Yeah, he almost beat Buffalo in a playoff game. He went 18 of 45 limits with two interceptions. Okay? Can we stop that, please? Limits?
I agree with you. He's not better than Mason. He showed some good things. Like, I would be intrigued to keep him around, but not at the expense of, you know, Will Howard on IR.
Who did he show good things against? Limits?
Backups.
Yeah, who's backups?
Carolina's backups and
Jacksonville's
backups. Right. Probably the two worst teams in the NFL last year.
So like I said, I mean, just the willful ignorance of not even acknowledging who one guy played against compared to who the next guy played against is just, it's insane to me. Somebody was reading their stats yesterday. You're going to read off their preseason stats without acknowledging that one guy played against Carolina and Jacksonville's backups? That's irrelevant to you? All right. I admit it. There's emotions playing into this today. I mentioned it earlier, my daughter's first day of her senior year of high school. My wife sent out pictures of her in kindergarten compared to today. Plus, I only got 1 hour, if that, of sleep. Because Bailey was crapping his brains out again. I don't know what he ate, limits. I can't figure it out anymore. Then he comes in. You can tell he feels guilty.
Yeah.
He has a blowout the size of game one of the 1985 NBA Finals, which was Celtics 148, Lakers 110. He comes in and he feels guilty. I mean, it's not me projecting human emotions onto his face. He literally feels guilty. And then I feel horrible. because I'm mad at him because I'm waking up six times during the night to go out and monitor his blowouts.
You're not yelling at Bailey, are you?
One time I didn't yell at him, but I yelled a swear
into
word.
Into the ether, yes.
Into the ether. But then he feels bad, and then I feel horrible. And then my wife said, you shouldn't have yelled like that. And I said, I'm sorry. You're right.
Have you asked your wife to get up and take Bailey out and take turns?
She does more than me, actually, but last night I took the reins.
There you go.
It's horrifying.
Well, our bell ringer was the Washington Commanders, keeping Terry McLaurin. The wide receiver signs a three-year extension worth 90.
Limits, you never reminded me of the bell ringer. You teased to it in the previous segment. Then I went out to take a pee, and then I got something to eat, and I forgot about it.
Yes, you did forget.
All right, what's the bell ringer?
I didn't want to step on any toes here, Joe. It's Terry McLaurin.
No, you'd never do that. You'd never step on a toe or interrupt a segment. Now you don't do it with Terry McLaurin when we had a tease.
You got on a good rant, Joe.
What do we have here? What did he sign for?
McLaurin, 3 years, $96 million. Have not seen how much of it is guaranteed. That is not been released.
All right.
But $96 million total. Mm. Big money deal for Terry McLaurin. He stays with the Washington Commanders. Any idea of a trade with the Steelers involving Alex Highsmith to try to acquire McLaurin? Not going to happen. More headlines. 93.7thefan.com. Headlines are powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.